We are indeed ready. I'm guessing from what I've heard that everyone who will be participating in this pre-hearing conference is present and connected. So let's proceed, please, with the record. The record will show that it is a little after 11 o'clock a.m., September 2nd, 2001, in the hearing room of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. This is the time, date, and place scheduled for a pre-hearing conference in the applications, separate applications for an adverse determination of prudence for the Big Stone Air Quality Control System project. By Montana Dakota Utilities Company, which is public service case number PU-11-163, and Otter Tail Power Company, which is case number PU-11-165. I am Al Wall, an administrative law judge designated by the North Dakota Public Service, or designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings pursuant to the request of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to serve as their hearing officer for these cases. Mr. Kuntz, will you state your appearance for the record, please?
Daniel S. Kuntz. With MDU Resources Group, appearing on behalf of the applicant, Montana Dakota Utilities Co. Also with me is Tammy Aberle, Director of our Regulatory Affairs Department.
Mr. Bring.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mark Bring with Otter Tail Corporation, appearing on behalf of Otter Tail Power Company, and I am joined by Pete Bison, Otter Tail Power Company's Manager of Regulatory Economics.
Ms. Herman.
Judge Wall, this is Sarah Herman, and I'm appearing today solely for the purpose of satisfying the appearance requirements of the Admission to Practice Rule 3. My understanding is that requirement is satisfied by my appearance by phone today, and in light of that fact, I hereby move that Mr. Brown be allowed to proceed in light of his admission pro hac vice, and that I be excused from further proceedings in this matter.
The motion is granted, and you may be excused. You are excused from your appearance and attendance for further proceedings for these cases. Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Judge Wall.
Mr. Brown?
Participants leaving are
Sarah Herman.
Mr. Brown, you're would you state your appearance for the record, please?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. This is Andrew Brown at Dorsey and Whitney in Minneapolis, Minnesota, appearing for both of the applicants.
Mr. Grumman.
Your Honor, Mark Grumman, PSC Advocacy Staff. With me today is Chris Merle, Project Manager for this matter from Advocacy Staff. Also on the phone line is Richard Hahn from LaCapra Associates, our expert in this matter. And then, Mr. Hahn, could you please state again the colleague that's with you there?
Yes, Douglas, middle initial A, last name Smith, S-M-I-T-H. Doug is a senior consultant here at LaCapra Associates, and he'll be assisting me in our technical review.
And last but not least, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, advisory counsel to the commission, and with me today is Patrick Fawn.
Thank you, counsel. Let me just follow roughly the sequence for the purposes of the pre-hearing conference as I set forth in the notice of hearing. But first, Mr. Brown, help me, please. What is your status? How will you participate in these hearings? You are representing both, as I understand it, Montana, Dakota, and Otter Tail. Who is leading for these proceedings?
Thank you, Your Honor. The anticipation is if the motion to consolidate the hearings is granted, and we proceed in that fashion, that I would be lead counsel for the hearing for the applicants.
I see. All right. Thank you. I understand. Well, then let's proceed directly then. My understanding, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, is that it's the thought of commission counsel, if not the commission, that these cases may be effectively consolidated for the hearings in accordance with the commission's rule.
That's correct. And we were hoping to discuss today this specific meaning of consolidation. And similarly to what was discussed at a pre-hearing conference for the NSP rate case, which the number I don't have, and then was then memorialized in an ALJ pre-hearing order.
Would you like those numbers, Ilana? Or it's 10657 and 11-55.
Okay. All right. Is our counsel familiar with, I guess, what I would refer to as terms and conditions for the consolidation that was previously done by the commission? Mr. Kuntz, do you have you have those in mind?
No, not off the top of my head.
All right. Well, let's talk about those. Okay. Because I guess the question is, well, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, does the commission propose that the same terms and commissions, the same terms and provisions apply for the consolidation of these cases as has been used previously?
Yes, and if you want me to get a copy of that, I will go and get one.
I don't know that I need one now. I'm sure I have no objection to it. I'm just off the top of my head. I don't know what all the
It's similar to, it's pretty much what the ALJ said aloud at the beginning of the hearing, say, in Big Stone 1, okay? But then we preserved it in writing and got a little more formal about it because we do have a rule providing for consolidating hearings when there's similar issues of law or fact, something like that.
And the interests of the public.
It would not be prejudiced.
And the parties are not
prejudiced. And so we decided, well, we better be more formal about this and say that we're doing it and make those findings if they're legitimate findings. So we're developing a procedure now. This will be the second time we follow it. But I certainly can, if you have the list with you, I can copy it quickly.
Council, why don't I just read through them. I have them. They're relatively short. Here's what happened. In the pre-hearing conference for the previous case that is referred to, the hearing officer made a recommendation of, again, what I would loosely call terms and conditions for the consolidation in the pre-hearing order as a recommendation to the commission. The commission, by rule, makes a decision whether or not to consolidate. In that case, the commission decided to consolidate and then, by its order, incorporated the recommendation of the pre-hearing order, which was the hearing officer's recommendation. Those terms and conditions were as follows. First, the commission will keep a separate document for each application. Second, there will be one hearing on the two applications. Three, there will be one hearing record for the two applications. All of the evidence presented and admitted at the hearing will be included in the one hearing record. Four, the commission will issue one order on the two applications based on findings of fact and conclusions of law supporting and explaining that one order. Five, if there is evidence presented at the hearing and admitted that is applicable only to one application, its limited applicability will be explained in the findings of fact and conclusions of law. And sixth, counsel will make their presentations of evidence and write proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law in such a manner as to explain any limited applicability of evidence. Now, just let me add to that a thought that I have, which I'm not sure really varies this very much. But we did something similar to this, in Big Stone 2. We did not consolidate, we combined. But then we had a very clear understanding, I think, which we in fact reaffirmed, if you will, or affirmed, by a stipulation of counsel at the hearing, that all of the evidence which was offered and received would apply, well, I'm not sure apply is the right word, would be relevant to both cases unless it was expressly offered for one case or the other, which seemed to make sense to me in that it would eliminate reservation, if you will, or any reevaluation after the case was closed, and would leave it to the commission to decide ultimately if the evidence was not relevant for a particular finding of fact or conclusion of law. And I'm not sure that's clear here. Now, I think that's really the intent of these terms and condition. Number five, if there is evidence presented at the hearing and admitted that is applicable only to one applications, its limited applicability will be explained in the findings of fact. Well, I really don't, what I'm trying to avoid, counsel, is the thought that, you know, after the hearing is all said and done, there's the inevitable light on the stairs. I mean, we all have that experience. I think that once you have the evidence in, and it's not limited to one case or the other that applies to your, as applies to your particular position, then I think I don't want to have the commission face a later brief or proposed findings of fact that says, oh, this evidence is limited only to this case. At that point, it becomes a decision for the commission to make based on a question of relevance. That is, unless counsel limits its offer, then it's going to be up to the commission to decide the relevance. Yeah, the case is, the hearing is closed.
So if I understand correctly, Your Honor, the default is it's relevant to both cases unless counsel specifically offers it only for one. Is that basically
that's
what
you're saying? That's exactly right. And that also allows, in this case, I guess, co-counsel, in effect, to say, no, wait a minute, I don't really think so. I think this evidence is relevant to our position also. And then I think you can get a ruling on that, and it's done. Now, that still doesn't mean that the commission says later in their consideration and deliberation that they would decide to limit the evidence. I don't think any ruling that I may make on an objection necessarily binds a commission to the evaluation of evidence. But what I want to avoid is any risk that after the hearing we're going to have a request to reopen, or we're going to have a problem with the evidence because we've left it open to a later interpretation when the parties submit findings of fact or proposed findings of fact. Now, maybe this is a solution without a problem. Mr. Coons.
On behalf of Montana Dakota, I don't have an objection to that. I think the likelihood of that becoming a problem in this particular proceeding is probably pretty small. It's certainly some of our witnesses, for example, will be testifying to things that are only probably applicable to Montana, Dakota, and I think those will be fairly self-evident, and we can certainly make that announcement in advance of those witnesses testifying. But particularly, I suppose, more likely with Otter Tail, since they're the plant operator, it's a possibility that some of their witness testimony could spill over to things that are relevant to both or be strictly relevant to Otter Tail's application. But even, you know, we can try to make that clear as we go along. I mean, I'd hate to have a situation where each Q&A we have to say this, you know. But I think in this case, I don't think the likelihood of prejudice if we don't get it perfect is going to make much difference here. I think it'll be pretty self-evident as to which stuff is applicable only to one company.
Mr. Bring?
Your Honor, Otter Tail has no objection to consolidation or the proposed terms under which consolidation would occur. We agree that these dockets involve similar questions of law or facts, and we do not believe the public interest would be prejudiced by consolidation, nor would the rights of the parties.
Mr. Grumman.
No objection, Your Honor.
Is Jeff Gotsanko?
No, I think that it's fine, and I think the additional clarification is a good idea. I think all the commission is looking for is the parties tell us if there's something a little different, and then you can remind us again in your proposed findings. It's kind of where we're coming from.
No, I agree with that. I guess I take it that this really isn't a problem, but at the same time, counsel would not object to, and let's see if we can figure out a little wording.
So
I guess I would be inclined to modify provision the fifth term, which says, if there is evidence presented at the hearing and admitted that is applicable only to one application, its limited applicability will be explained by the findings of fact. And I would modify that, and I'm sorry I didn't do this in advance of the hearing. I should have. I guess I would preface that by another sentence which says just about exactly what we had, how we framed it before, that evidence offered and received will be relevant to both cases unless specifically offered for only one case. Mr. Kuntz?
We have no objection to that.
Mr. Bring?
No objection, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No objection, Your Honor.
And Ms. Jeff Gotsanko?
No objection.
Okay, that's fine. Then otherwise, I'm comfortable with all of the other provisions, and I will simply list all of those exactly as I have read them with that addition, and recommend that to the commission as part of the pre-hearing order. All right, counsel, anything further with regard to consolidation? Mr. Kuntz?
No.
Mr. Bring?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No.
Ms. Jeff Gotsanko?
No.
Okay, next on my list, I have questions of scheduling, and I put at the top of the list disclosure of witnesses, because I notice I have already received Otter Tail's witness list. So do counsel already have worked out a schedule for the disclosure of witnesses?
I believe one was filed for Montana, Dakota, too.
Oh, well, then I didn't receive it, and I guess I didn't see it on the docket card.
I believe... Did Mr. Brown file it on behalf of both parties?
Oh, maybe it was. I'm sorry, Mr. Brown.
Your Honor, that is correct. You have one witness disclosure statement from both applicants.
Oh, well, then I stand corrected. It came in the mail with Ms. Herman's motion, and I just assumed it was for Otter Tail. So I stand corrected. Then let me proceed. Then is there any scheduling which needs to be done with regard to disclosure of witnesses? What about expert witnesses?
At this point, I don't think so. Particularly, we don't have any interveners. I think today was the deadline for intervention. we don't have any interveners, and I think we pretty much know who the players are.
Okay, the day is not over, of course, does anyone have any knowledge of interveners?
No, but I'll go.
Possible?
I haven't looked at today's mail, so.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. I guess why don't we just assume that maybe one way or another council can work out a schedule with interveners, and if there's not, then if that can't be worked out, then obviously the solution is another pre-hearing conference. All right. Discovery. Any scheduling necessary for discovery, counsel? Mr. Kuntz?
Your Honor, I think the applicants have committed to try to turn around discovery responses as quickly as reasonably possible. We recognize the rules provide 30 days. We don't intend to use 30 days if we don't need to. Obviously, our ability to turn around discovery will be somewhat dependent upon the amount of discovery and the scope of the discovery that's requested of us, but we are committed to try to turn that around as quickly as possible from Montana Dakota standpoint.
Mr. Bring?
Your Honor, that is also true for Otter Tail Power Company.
Okay, then Mr. Grumman, what does advocacy staff have to say?
Thank you, Your Honor, I respect that. I think we would like something definitive in writing. We were looking at 10 calendar days. Now, of course, as Mr. Kuntz had articulated, if there's some type of problem, I think we all have a good working relationship. I think we just need to get each other on the phone, and we should be able to work it out.
So are you requesting a provision that there be a response to a discovery within 10 calendar days? Is that are you doing that by email? So is that emailed or received or what? You're not, if you got a bunch of documents, you're not doing that by email.
Well, some of it can be by email. A lot of it will be by email. Most of our documents are probably electronic copies. And if not, we would certainly FedEx them or advise staff that they will be, hard copy provided. I guess what I would say is, how about if we work on a presumption of a 10-day turnaround unless we advise you that a particular response is going to take longer than that, and then if we need to confer, we can do that. Would that be acceptable?
It would be.
Mark, does that work for Otter Tail too?
Yes, it does.
Okay, anything further, counsel? Anyone with regard to discovery? If not, next on my list is pre-filed testimony. Mr. Kuntz, you're right here with me. Why don't I just continue to start with you?
Well, just to give you a little background, Your Honor, in case you're not aware, what the parties had discussed and agreed to before was that the applicants, rather than filing pre-filed initial direct testimony, had submitted statements with their application that basically laid out what would be in pre-filed testimony if it were in a Q&A format. And the list of witnesses that you received was a list of the people who would be sponsoring those individual statements. So that the idea was we would not have to go through and basically put those same statements in Q&A format. That these are the people who would be sponsoring those statements at the hearing and then offering a summary of those statements, kind of similar to what we would normally do if we had pre-filed testimony, and then they would stand for cross on those on those statements. And then we sketched out kind of a schedule then for staff and intervener testimony, rebuttal testimony, and surrebuttal testimony based upon a proposed technical hearing date of November 8th and 9th. Of course, those dates have been agreed to be moved to the 29th and 30th, I believe.
Correct.
So I would assume that we would probably look at making some adjustments to the hearing dates that we had previously discussed.
and offer expedience, and I don't want to go out of turn, but I do have some dates down in that regard I could throw out for review. However, Your Honor, I guess I'd like to proceed. But
well, Mr. Brain, do you concur with Mr. Kuntz, or do you have anything to add to Mr. Kuntz's advice?
Your Honor, I think that was a fair characterization. When we filed our witness list and associated sponsored application statements on August 19, it indicates to the portion of the application that the witnesses would be sponsoring. And so I agree with his recitation of events.
All right. Mr. Grumman.
Thank you, Your Honor. What Chris and I have worked out is we're looking at, for advocacy staff pre-filed testimony, it being October 21st, and this is all predicated upon a November 29th and 30th TAC hearing. Rebuttal testimony then.
Wait a minute.
Oh, you bet. Sorry, when ready.
And that's advocacy staff pre-filed testimony when?
October 21.
Okay, next.
Time for rebuttal testimony from OTP and MDU then would be November 10th. And again, the TAC hearing of November 29th and 30th.
Okay.
So then, did you have a surrebuttal date, Mark? Or?
You know, I know how we did it in our rate cases, that if, you know, if it was necessary, I was thinking it was something where we could get your rebuttal and then discuss, I guess, further and, yeah, see where we're at.
Okay.
So, in other words, we just wouldn't have a provision for a surrebuttal.
Yeah, not at this point. I think it's one of those things where it's my understanding, at least how the last case that I handled is, we won't formalize it at this point, but staff, of course, will meet and discuss about what we want to do at that point and then essentially get everyone together right away and if we do want to do surrebuttal.
All right. So, essentially, Mr. Kuntz, the short of it is that the applicants will not file pre-file testimony.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's
other than the statements that were submitted with the application,
which really aren't pre-file testimony.
Right.
It's a statement of what the testimony, the subject of the testimony, of the witnesses. Okay, and that was filed with the applications.
That's correct. The applications, as I recall, included appendices. We had various statements. You know, appendix one had a statement, and basically, for example, would have been, you know, the Q&A testimony of a particular witness.
Right. Got it. All right, Mr. Kuntz, your response, if any, to Mr. Grumman's proposal.
So the 21st instead of 10th, so that would be, Tammy, I think it looks reasonable from our standpoint.
Right, and I can't read my writing. The rebuttal from MDU and Otter Tail Power is November 16th?
November 10th.
10th, same. Yeah. Okay, got it. I'm sorry. Mr. Bring, any response to Mr. Grumman's proposal?
Your Honor, the proposal is acceptable to Otter Tail Power Company.
Okay, I'll incorporate it in the order. Anything, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I don't think advocacy staff has any care about what the dates actually are, but I did think that perhaps we should talk to the commission, Pat and I, about the no pre-filed direct. We'll just find out from them if they would prefer a question and answer.
Just so they understand that basically the Q&A would look almost identical to what's
statement?
In this.
Yeah.
I just thought
of this now, not the last time we talked, but we thought maybe we should ask.
I didn't like his headline numbers.
The statements, I don't recall.
Just thinking of it's maybe easier for the commissioner to say, well, page 3, line number 26,
there's a statement that, there. Yeah, I don't recall. Chris has got the application.
Well, I'm not I'm not going to make any comment on that in the pre-hearing order.
Okay, that's
fine. If I say anything, I'll simply say that, I don't know what I'll say, but to the effect, I'll say something, if I say anything at all, I'll say something to the effect that the applicants will not be filing formal pre-hearing testimony. And I guess I can add that the substance of the witness's testimony is part of the application, and therefore the applicants will not be filing a further pre-filed testimony.
And if it would help, I don't think we'd have a problem of resubmitting those statements with line numbers, if that would make it easier to, so you can identify, on page 2, line 4, you made a statement of so-and-so. If that would be, that wouldn't be a big issue for us.
It wouldn't be. I was just thinking that, if I was looking at it, it would be easier for me, and I don't know if the commissioners would care, but.
Yeah, as I recall, the statements weren't that long, but it certainly wouldn't be a big deal if that would be a preference to resubmit those with line numbers.
I think that would be a good idea. We wouldn't have to.
We don't. Montana, Dakota doesn't have a problem with that. We can do that.
Mr. Bring?
Your Honor, I think that we could accommodate such a request. I believe on August 19, when we identified the witnesses and then stated the portions of the application that they're sponsoring, we may have had some detail with regard to the sponsored statements, but we can provide additional detail if it's desired.
Well, I'm not sure it's additional detail, Mr. Bring. I think the proposal on the table, which Mr. Fawn has suggested may be satisfactory, is simply to redo the information regarding the substance of the witness's testimony, which was submitted with the application, but redo it with numbered lines. The identical be the identical thing you submitted before, but simply print it with numbered lines.
Yes, and what I'm envisioning is as the witnesses would take the stand, they would have a statement that could, their statement that was introduced as the applicant, only this time it would be introduced with line numbers on it. So that could be marked as separate, because you like to have them marked anyhow, separately. And then the witness would introduce, this is the statement that I'm sponsoring, and there would be line numbers on it, and we could just pre-file those early on, and so that if somebody wanted to refer to a particular line number, they would have that in advance.
Exactly. Specifically for the commissioner's questioning, they would be able to question a witness based on a reference to a line number in the statement.
Line and page.
Your Honor, that's acceptable for Otter Tail Power Company.
All right. Mr. Grumman?
It is. That's acceptable.
Yeah. Okay. Anything further with regard to pre-filed testimony? That's the end of my list. Let me add one more thing with regard to witness lists and so on. In the interest of saving paper, postage, and not to say the least, staff time and effort, there really isn't any reason to send me copies of what you routinely send me copies of what is being filed. I check rather frequently, certainly not daily, but almost certainly weekly. I check the docket cards for the cases assigned to me, and it's all online for me. And if there's anything that I'm interested in, I take a look at it. If there's anything that I feel a need to have for the file, I print it out. So that really works for me. Now, the exception, of course, is if anything comes up that requires my action, you certainly should send that to me, because it's possible that a week could go by without me even being aware of it otherwise. Now, the other thing you can also routinely send me, you can add, if you do emails, other than between counsel as to, I have no interest in the fact that you're not going to make the 10-day turnaround on something, and we'll get it to you next week, Tuesday. That's of no interest to me. But if you're talking about procedural things or scheduling or anything that might be helpful to me, I mean, you can just simply add me as a CC on an email, just, and especially if it's something that I should be maybe prompted to look at. And I don't know how you file. Do you file by, I suppose you file by letter without an email?
It's usually both, because we require electronic filing, so we often get the hard copy, because we also require that, and the electronic.
When you file a hard copy, do you cover that with an email saying, when you file the electronic documents, material, whatever, do you cover that with an email saying attached is such and such?
I think
typically what we would do is you'd make the paper copy and then send an email saying attaches the copies of the documents that were filed with the commission today.
Yeah. Well, it would be helpful to, again, Dick, CC that to me. No big deal, but if you happen to think about it, it'd be helpful to CC that to me. That would prompt me to look at the docket card. So I can stay about as current as I need to be with these things, and you don't have to send stuff to me. I don't have to put it on a pile, and I don't have to bring it back and handle it and all of those sorts of things. Okay? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
Are you asking then for John, like what happens now is we're going to get an email from MDU, and it'll get docketed, and then John will be sending it to you. This is what's docketed today, you know. Do you not want John to do that anymore?
No, he's welcome to do that.
Okay.
Now, again, I'm really trying to not waste things.
Right.
Really, including effort.
I know. I think that might be easier than him reversing what he's developed.
Yeah, I don't want to upset any schedules, okay. And that's true for counsel, too. I mean, it's not going to be a big deal if you don't copy to me, really. And frankly, it's not going to be a big deal if you do copy to me. I'm just saying.
It's not a big deal to add you to the email either.
Yeah,
so, it's,
yeah.
you might get two emails. But
yeah.
Paper copies, we know, is an unnecessary extra expense.
Yeah, that's what we really don't need is to send me things.
Okay.
All right. Does anybody, counsel, any other comment on what you send to me or don't send to me? I mean, this is not one way or the other. It's just not a big deal, but anything for the record in that regard? Okay, then we are now at my list where I simply come to other matters. Let's maybe stay with scheduling. Have we got any other matters concerning scheduling, counsel? Anyone? Not?
Your Honor, Mark Bring with Otter Tail Power Company. I wanted to find out whether we should establish a specific start date for the technical hearing, the time.
The commission will be establishing that if the dates are okay. I mean, the commission will be doing a notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you thinking that you want a different starting time than the normal 8:30, 9:00 or whatever they pick?
No, I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew the starting time during the day so that we're there and present and ready to go.
I guess I have one. I mean, hypothetically, if we do get this done in a day, maybe we should at least shoot for maybe a 9 o'clock starting time in that regard. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
Again, unless there's some conflict with the commission, which they'll tell us about when we do the notice.
You know, for Montana, we're the easiest to accommodate. We're here. So whatever start time you pick works for us. I mean, the experts in Otter Tail are the ones having to travel, and Mr. Brown, so.
I mean, unless you had, some objection to the normal starting time.
No.
For some reason.
We don't.
Nor would we. Just wanted to make sure that we knew the time so that we could have our people available at the present, at the right time.
You'll be getting that notice by certified mail. Be careful.
I suspect most people will come in the evening before anyway, so a reasonably early start date.
That's right.
Can get done in the day.
All right, anything further with regard to scheduling, anyone? If not, I'm at the bottom of my list, counsel. Is there any other matters that counsel have that should be addressed at this pre-hearing conference, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
This is to your last topic about saving resources. I was wondering if the parties would agree to electronic service, and I was wondering if the ALJ's order would constitute written authorization, because I think it's written consent to electronic service is the standard. And also in that regard, and this is just a question that I don't know enough about, but I didn't know if Ms. Herman needed to stay on the service list when she's been excused from further participation, because that would save one envelope, too, if we're sending something in the mail. So if the parties, we're still going to certify a notice, and we're still going to certify an order, and we're going to do it to one attorney for each applicant. And so I would like to clear up at this meeting who that would be and whether all the other service can be electronic. Is that okay with you? Yeah. Okay. That's my question.
Mr. Kuntz.
We would so agree. The certified copy can be sent to me with electronic copies. We would accept electronic service of other documents.
Mr. Bring?
Your Honor, I would accept on behalf of Otter Tail Power Company.
Mr. Grumman?
And myself on behalf of advocacy staff.
All right, and I will make it part of the order. Let me just add with a very little thought that I do not think it's necessary for Ms. Herman to receive any further service for any proceedings in this case. And Mr. Brown, I welcome your comment, but that would be my view, because she's simply been excused from all further proceedings, so it makes no sense to notify her of further proceedings or give her further copies of any further filings. On the other hand, I'm not so sure just what her status is of associate counsel if somebody has some, I'm not sure what the procedure is. I wonder, Mr. Brown, whether she shouldn't stay as associate counsel on the pleadings, on the documents that are filed. I really don't have a feeling about that. I'm not sure. I'm inclined to think she still has a status as resident associate counsel, notwithstanding that she's been excused from attending, that is, appearing for the proceedings. I don't know. Mr. Brown?
Your Honor, I would agree with that. I think that would be the appropriate way to list her. I think if I would anticipate that my name would be on there in my status, but hers as well.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I don't think there's any harm in it in any case. So let's follow that procedure, but certainly she can be omitted from any service lists.
Your Honor, this is Mr. Brown. Could I ask that, and I don't think Ms. Herman has any expectation that she would be continued to serve, so I don't think she will have any different understanding or expectation than what you've just ordered. But if it wasn't too burdensome, and so that I wouldn't be entirely dependent upon one of the clients forwarding me papers, could I be on the service list?
Oh, yes, indeed. As soon as the commission, in my view, as soon as the commission, and as I understand the statements made by you, as soon as the commission orders consolidation, then you certainly would be added to the list. I think then you're participating in your status as lead counsel for both applicants, and away we go.
I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
And I'm sorry. We should have talked about that.
No, that's very good. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, you're squared away.
Yes, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. We will be emailing Mr. Brown. We will be certifying the individual counsel for the two parties, Dan and Mark.
Yes.
Okay, and emailing them, but in emailing Mr. Brown and not emailing Ms. Herman.
You agree, Mr. Brown?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
All right. All right. That's good. Now, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything further? Mr. Kuntz, anything further for the record?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Bring, anything further for the record?
No, Your Honor, but I would like to thank you for allowing the telephonic participation.
Well, let me thank you, Mr. Bring, for connecting everything up from your end. I've kind of sloughed off this telephone management on Mr. Sheldon, and he has ably assumed that task to my great gratitude. But I can't tell you that without your help, I'm not sure, and no reflection on Mr. Sheldon, but I'm not sure what kind of a situation we would have had here had we had to use our system to connect everything up. So we, all of us, frankly, thank you very much for that. Mr. Brown.
It was my pleasure, Judge, and thank you to Scott.
Mr. Brown, anything further for the record?
Nothing, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Mr. Grumman, anything further for the record?
Your Honor, I don't, unless Mr. Hahn has any comments that he'd like to make.
In fact, Your Honor, I was going to suggest once we go off the record to see if there would be any value, if Mr. Hahn has anything he would like us to give us a heads up on in terms of what he's going to be looking for, that we can get started to make his process easier, but we can do that after we go off the record.
Yeah, I don't see that as part of my record.
That's good.
Otherwise, anything further, Mr. Grumman?
And I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Anything further for the record, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Counsel. The record for this pre-hearing conference is closed.